Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with our friend Ed Alexander. Ed and I welcome you to the Buckmaster Show on this first day of October 2015, another hot day, unseasonably hot for this time of year. Maybe every 4 or 5 years, we have temperatures over 100 degrees in early October. So I, for one, hope this is the last of the triple digit temperatures. Hopefully, we will be able to move on now into fall. Coming to you live from AM 1030 KVOI, The Voice. And you don't need to be by a radio. You can live stream our show at buckmastershow.com and kvoi.com. We have podcasts of all of our work and the complete show archive since we began this project almost 5 years ago. That's available at buckmastershow.com. And there are links to our program. Our media partners are TucsonSentinel.com, Inside Tucson Business, the Green Valley News, and Sahorita Sun. And our newest media partner is TucsonLifestyle.com. We're going to begin with a discussion about downtown with famed restaurateur and downtown Tucson advocate Janos Wilder. At 12:30, we talk with Steve Lynn about the charter change items on the ballot in the city of Tucson. Then we will wrap up the show with attorney Don Luce. He is the Buckmaster Show contributor on legal affairs. Our live line number, 790-2040. If you have a question or comment for Janos, he would be happy to entertain your questions. And if you would like to become a friend of the show, and we hope you will, our Facebook page is under my name, Bill Buckmaster, and also you can follow us now on Twitter at Buckmaster Show. Let's welcome now Janos Wilder. Janos, how are you?
I'm great, Bill. How about you?
Doing very well. It's very good to see you again. Tucson's only James Beard Award-winning chef, longtime downtown Tucson advocate, Janos. We'll be opening up a 4,000-foot events center and cooking school early next year in an historic downtown building. Janos is also the incoming board chairman for Native Seed Search, so there is certainly lots to talk with Janos about. First of all, Janos, the new venture, this is exciting. It's a neat space. I know this space. Right now, the Amity Children's and Family Center has their Dragonfly Gallery in that space.
Yes, and they're right behind where Downtown Kitchen and Cocktails is, so I just have to walk across Arizona Alley, and I get to go from one job to the next.
What do you like about this space?
Well, first of all, it's a beautiful space. It's an old building. It's almost 100 years old. It was built in 1917, so it's got great architectural bones and really some wonderful details, skylights, really super high ceilings and brick walls and wood floors. It feels right. And so that's really important to me. And it's a wide open space, so it gives us an opportunity to do a whole lot of different things. And there's an event space, you know, one night it may be a dinner for 160, and the next morning we might be setting up for a cooking class, and that evening be doing something completely different. A wide open space is important to us. All of those sort of architectural design elements really work into what we want to do there.
And the cooking school, this is new really for Tucson. We've had cooking classes. Certainly you did some when you were up at Weston. But this is kind of a real cooking school.
Right. No, it's really more cooking classes, what you were describing. We had a cooking school, Culinary Concepts.
Okay.
And they've been gone for a few years, and she did a really marvelous job, but it was also consumer oriented, and this is very much consumer oriented. So that's a big piece of what we're going to be doing, our cooking classes, and it won't just be me teaching those classes, and I've been teaching classes at my restaurants for the whole time I've been in Tucson, pretty much, me and my staff as well. But we're really reaching out into the community of chefs, and we're going to be bringing a lot of everyone's favorite chefs from Tucson and outside of Tucson to teach classes. It's actually a cooking school in a video studio, so we'll be creating content there as well and streaming what we do on a YouTube channel, so you'll have lots of opportunities to see that. So that's a really fun thing. And I think that it'll allow us to tell a different story about the culinary history and the sense of culinary sense of place here in Tucson through the classes. So not only will we be cooking them and other chefs from around town, but we will be partnering with Visit Tucson. We'll be partnering with Edible Baja to bring a lot of the producers in to be doing classes with them as well.
You're branding this as the Carriage
House? The Carriage House, yes.
Okay. Is that what this building is referred to?
Yeah, it's called the Carriage House.
Okay.
And it kind of was, in a way. This is the first automobile dealership in Tucson to have indoor display for the automobiles.
Gotcha.
So it was built as that, but we're not going to use it for that.
Bring in some old automobiles. Yeah. There'll probably be enough space for you to do that. It's 12:10 on the Buckmaster Show. Janos Wilder is with us. If you would like to check in with Janos, 790-2040 is the Buckmaster Show live line. It's hard to believe your five-year anniversary with Downtown Kitchen and Cocktails.
I know. It's gone fast. It's been an exciting time. When we opened this, we didn't really... I knew downtown was on the verge of becoming something really special. I really felt it was going to turn around after lots of fits and starts over the years, but I couldn't have imagined what we see down there now.
Well, you believed in downtown early on, 83 or 84.
It was 83, yeah.
83,
yeah.
Where you relocated to Tucson. I think you were weren't you up in Santa Fe?
Yeah, I was in Santa Fe directly before
that.
In France
and
Santa Fe before that, Colorado.
Yeah,
and we came here. My wife's from Nogales. We opened here on Halloween, 1983.
What a great building.
Yeah.
The building, of course, still there. It's part of the Tucson Museum of Art complex. But I remember... when I moved back to Tucson in 1988, one of the first places we wanted to go have a meal was Janos, because we had read about what you were doing, and with some really innovative things, a very creative menu using local ingredients. And Janos, I got to tell you, man, you are really at the forefront of this whole thing with local ingredients. Localism that's often called, I'm trying to think of the slow foods. Slow foods.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that was always important to me, but it was really for practical reasons more than anything else, and it still is for practical reasons. The best of what you can get is generally grown locally. So when we opened in 83, I'd actually come immediately prior to here was working in France, and I wanted to cook French food. And to me, the heart and soul of French cooking was the relationship between the chef and the gardener, all of the chef's producers. And so we started actually advertising for gardeners before we advertised for staff back then, because I wanted to be able to cook with things we couldn't get on the produce market. And that's really how it started. And so we started that network. And I wasn't even aware at that point of what had always grown here. I came to Tucson and didn't know anything about it really, but I was interested in what was possible, not what had been. And then I became very interested in what had been, what had come before, what had always grown here, what were really the truly authentic flavors, ingredients of the region. And that's when I got hooked up with Native Seed Search. And initially was really that exploration of the foods of the region. And that became the sort of thing that began to inform all of our menus moving forward, when we were downtown, and then when we moved up to the grounds of the Westin La Paloma.
You know, when you bring up Native Seed Search, the first person who comes to mind is Dr. Gary Nabhan.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. One of the founders.
Yeah. And that, how long ago was that?
So same year we opened. I mean, that's
really?
1983.
Yeah. So the Native Seed Search kind of parallels what you have done in the culinary business in Tucson.
Well, yeah, we're kind of contemporaries, yes.
Yeah. So, and now you're going to be the incoming board chair. How is Native Seed Search doing? And for people who don't know what it's about, what is it about?
Okay. Native Seed Search started with a realization that seeds, strains of seeds native to this region, and loosely that's north to Mexico and into Sonora, were in danger of extinction. They weren't being farmed in native communities any longer in many cases, and had just fallen, were in danger of falling off the map and extinction. And so the founders went about a really systematized collection of those seeds. Now we have close to 2,000 unique seed lines, unique to this region and unique from each other in our seed bank, the seed bank being a set of freezers that we preserve these seeds and we grow out the seeds. So the mission was initially to collect the seeds, preserve the seeds in safekeeping, and distribute those seeds. Well, in fact, now, a little over 30 years later, we've actually succeeded in that mission. It's a wonderful success story to tell, you know, what the seeds that we've collected and how they're saved, and we're putting them back into communities. And through our store on Campbell, we're selling our seeds and other seeds as well, so helping the gardening community. But now it's sort of, what's the next step for this organization? You can say success, but you've got which is great, but you've got a thriving organization. So how do you move forward? And there are lots of opportunities for us, not the least of which comes from the realization that the seeds that we have in our collection are those seeds that are already uniquely adapted to hot, arid climates. So as you start considering the effects of climate change, we may have the DNA in many ways that is uniquely equipped to thrive and survive in even hotter environments.
All right, Janos Wilder with us. We're going to spend a half an hour with Janos. That means we have another segment, but first it's time to take a break on the Buckmaster Show as we give our thanks to the people who support our hour here. Give it a listen and give them a try on the Buckmaster Show.
Your Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona is setting the standard for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. Being accredited with BBB means that your business holds the same high standards and consumers can count on you to keep your word. Hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans use our website every month. Make sure they find your business. Call us today to discuss the many benefits of BBB accreditation at 888-6161 or go to our website at bbb.org/Tucson.
As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com, or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary works to end the senseless abuse of horses and burros so these noble creatures can live free of pain and suffering. Its ranch in Amado is home to dozens of rescued equines who receive special care as they await new, loving homes. Won't you help? Visit equinevoices.org. Equine Voices, a voice for all equines who cannot speak for themselves.
Hi, this is Sean McCluskey, co-owner and designated broker for Rincon Ventures. If you're a rental owner by choice or by accident, and you're looking to hire or change property management companies, consider Rincon Ventures. We employ an aggressive web-based advertising strategy to market your rental. We thoroughly screen prospective tenants and conduct routine property inspections. Our online system gives tenants the ability to pay rent and file maintenance requests instantly over the web. Our owners can use the same system to instantly check on their properties. Call Rincon Ventures at 881-2258 or visit us on the web at rvprop.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Ready to do some antiquing? If you love a special one-of-a-kind object like I do, I strongly suggest Adobe House Antique, specializing in early 20th century European and American art, and they have the best selection in town of antique light fixtures. Adobe House Antiques in the Jostler Design Building at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, and on the web at adobehouseantiques.com.
Ah, It's 6 a.m. and my flight leaves for Denver in 2 hours. But no need to rush. Because I'm flying out of Tucson, I have some extra me time, which means I can relax and start my day the way I love to start every day, with a run, a hot shower, and breakfast with my family, not a 2-hour drive in rush hour traffic.
Flying from Tucson International Airport is convenient and cost-effective. Check out our cost comparison calculator at flytucson.com or text the word COMPARE to 51313. Fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. We are visiting with Janos Wilder here on the program today. Janos, 5 years ago, made the move from his restaurant up by the West in La Paloma down to downtown, opening up Downtown Kitchen and Cocktails. What's this Round the World tour that's still going on downtown? That's your place.
Yeah, so it is. You don't have to go around the world to have great food from around the world. So we do a menu every month. We change. We visit different downtowns around the globe. So it's called Downtowns Around the Globe. And so this year we started in Istanbul. From Istanbul, we went to Moscow. From Moscow, we went to Kingston, Jamaica. And we are now, for the last stop on the tour, we're in Zhengzhou, China, which is the capital of the Sichuan province. So wonderful, great, full-flavored foods with nice spice, but not over-spicy, and really super sophisticated layering of flavors in the foods from that part of the world. So that's been a lot of fun and keeps us busy all summer, I'll tell you.
So is that a special menu then?
Yeah, so it's part of the regular menu, and it's a special menu on its own. So you can order any of those items a la carte, or on a special menu, you can order those in a three-course menu as well.
We were talking before the break with Janos about his new chairmanship, board chair of Native Seed Search, and I wanted to ask you, give us an example of some food that perhaps almost became extinct, food that was that's very traditional to the Sonoran Desert.
Well, one of the foods was Sonoran white wheat that came in about 500 years ago or so with Father Kino, and that was a wheat that was not being used any longer. Really phenomenal wheat, and that is really made a huge comeback. You're seeing it in restaurants that are baking with it. You see it in breweries who are using it to brew beer with. It's got really kind of a nutty flavor. It's a great flavor and a wonderful flour that's unique to this region.
For bread or dinner rolls or something?
Yeah, for bread, dinner rolls. People are putting in their pizza doughs. People are using it to ferment with. It's you know, great flavor, but that's something that's unique to here and very well could have died out. Mm-hmm. And then we have seeds in our seed catalog that were just down to, you know, handfuls of seeds left that are now we've been able to regenerate and reproduce and now are sustainable at this point again.
Let's go to the Buckmaster Show live line. Our friend Tia Gloria would like to speak with Janos Wilder. Hi, Tia.
Hello, this is Gloria.
Hi, Gloria.
I need to thank Mr. Wilder because to go to his restaurant, you can make a reservation online. And then they say, are there any special needs? And I said, I have a very big need of saying hello to Chef Wilder myself.
Well, how are you today, Gloria?
And he came to our table, and our son, the chef, was with us, and you were so gracious. I mean, beyond gracious. It was wonderful, and the food was so good. And we're on our way, even right as we speak, to Native Seed Search to get wildflower seeds for the next season.
Very good.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much. Well, that's the fun part of my work, actually.
Yes. Thank you. And continued success to you.
Thank you, Gloria. And the Native Seed Search on Campbell, some really nice gift ideas.
Yeah, not only do we sell a wide variety of seeds there, but lots of gift ideas, items as well, and really authentic Tarahumara crafts. So really the authentic sorts of implements of this region. And we buy all of our beautiful wooden salad bowls there. They're just gorgeous. And so all sorts of things that you might want to give as gifts or that you can plant in your own yard.
When did you think you wanted to get into the restaurant business? I know that you started the career, working at a pizza place in Redwood City?
Yeah. So it found me, I think, more than anything else when I was a kid. And I liked it, but I didn't, enjoyed it a lot, but didn't think much more about it until I'd graduated from college and was sort of on the career track to go into law or grad school or something. I'd graduated with a degree in political science. And when you get out of college and you sort of assess your life and think, what do you want to do next? I really realized I was doing what I wanted to do. I'd been cooking at that point for 5 or 6 years and had some talent for it, but more than that, really, really enjoyed it and began to learn that it could satisfy a lot of the things that I wanted in my life and, the physicality of cooking in the kitchen and the creativity that it brings, but a lot more as a business person as well. So it really coalesced a lot of the things that were important to me and gave me an opportunity to sort of branch into things and other things that can make a difference as well.
Janos, I think when you made that decision in 2010, and I remember it was a big news story when Janos Wilder has decided to open a place in downtown. I think that was one of those kind of turning points that people started to think, well, maybe downtown Tucson, which had just horrible publicity, as you know, about the Rio Nuevo and all that, I think people started to think, well, maybe this whole thing is going to come back.
Well, apparently so, because a lot of restaurants have opened up since I did, so and it has come back. I felt at that point it wasn't really a question of if, but it was a question of when. I couldn't envision what we see there now, but I felt we sort of had passed the tipping point already. And it was important. What I saw wasn't the streetcar, it wasn't in yet and people were talking about it, but it was going to be a time off, a ways away. But I saw the construction of the underpass at 4th Avenue connecting the university to downtown. And to me, looking at that and seeing what it could become and what it meant by broadening that thoroughfare, I thought we were building the Champs-Élysées in downtown Tucson and connecting the university to downtown. And in fact, that, I think, was a major impetus. And with that, you began to see a lot of private capital coming into downtown, small investors, restaurants, bars, small shops making investments on a private level, without really much benefit from the city's interference or help, but people seeing an opportunity. And at that point, even 5 years ago, I suppose there were four lower barriers to entry. Restaurants are always sort of the first place that people get into, and we see immigrants always get into restaurants for a couple of reasons. One, there are fewer barriers to entry. It's not necessarily that expensive to get into, although downtown is becoming quite expensive to do now. But also, that is a way that they can bring their culture from home to their new home, which is really what downtown is all about.
They're really getting into a business that they know something about. They've probably been cooking at home forever, and they know their own culture, right?
They certainly know the food. They certainly know the culture, and they're smart enough to watch every penny of it.
What's the future of downtown? What do we need downtown?
Well, in my mind, downtown's already got a lot of what it needs, but I think we need more people living downtown. We need more places for people to live downtown, and then more of the everyday sorts of services that you need. So Johnny Gibson's just reopened as a grocery store, which I think is just fantastic. That really gives the locals who live downtown, that's a lot of my staff, that's where they get their groceries. You'll see dry cleaners, you'll see pharmacies opening, you'll see all the everyday sorts of needs fulfilled downtown, and that will come hand in hand with more people living downtown. And that's what really breathes life into a downtown, is not only you don't just look for people to come in at night or during the day and then leave at the end of their workday, or come in just for dinner and then leave. You want people there all the time, and we're beginning to see that.
When do you think you'll be up and running with the Carriage House at 146 East Broadway?
We're shooting for January.
Mm-hmm. And what type of events, Janos, will you be able to accommodate? 4,000 square feet. Is that considered pretty good size or what?
Yeah, I think it's the sweet spot for us. We can do sit-down dinners up to 160 to perhaps even 180. We can do smaller events there. We'll have a private dining room that seats about 12 or 14, another smaller room that seats about 30, or then you can combine the whole thing for the larger size. So we'll see corporate dinners. We'll do
weddings. And we'll be anniversary dinners.
Exactly. All of those sorts of things. Then we'll be working with the local nonprofits to do their fundraising events, those sorts of things. So social events, the corporate things, and the weddings. And then we'll be doing our own events, too. We'll be creating our own events. We're going to be doing brunches on Sundays. And then, of course, the cooking schools and all the things that come with that.
All right, Janos Wilder, we can find out more about Downtown Kitchen and Cocktails on your fine website, downtownkitchen.com.
That's
did I
it.
Get that right?
You did.
Janos, good to see you. Congratulations making another investment in downtown, and I think this is going to help continue the train, which is pulled out of the station.
Yes,
so
it has.
Speak, and it's moving down the track for hopefully more economic prosperity in downtown Tucson. Janos Wilder, good to see you reconnecting and catching up. And thanks a lot.
Bill, thanks so much for having me. It's always great to see you.
Thank you very much. Janos Wilder on The Buckmaster Show. Almost exactly at this very moment, 12:30 in Buckmaster Land on a Thursday afternoon. Steve Lynn waiting on the live line to tell us about the city of Tucson, the charter change items. That's next.
Sometimes opportunity knocks. You've definitely met opportunity, and it may have even found you online. Opportunity also calls. It calls to see if you have an open appointment, even though it's really last minute. It calls to place a rush order for delivery, and it calls to ask about your holiday hours. With Cox Business Voice Manager, you can always follow up with Opportunity. So when it leaves a voicemail, you'll get it right to your email, which means all of your important messages reach you online. With Cox Business, you'll never miss an opportunity, no matter how it presents itself.
Bundle Cox Business Voice Manager and Internet for only $99 per month with a one-year agreement. Plus, get a $150 Visa prepaid card. Mention reward promo to qualify. Online redemption required. Visit coxbusiness.com. Ends 1/3/16. Includes Cox Business Internet 10 and Voice Manager Essential. Excludes taxes and fees. Visit coxbusiness.com for details. Other restrictions apply.
Pedestrian projects funded by the Regional Transportation Authority are now under construction at Treat Avenue and Broadway Boulevard and Craycroft Road in Fort Lowell Park. The crosswalk improvements provide added pedestrian safety. More than 37 high-intensity activated crosswalks have been funded by the RTA to date. We're improving safety and regional mobility for you. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. More at rtamobility.com.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year. And if you're over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
The Southern Arizona News Examiner, reporting the stories missed by the mainstream media. Our sources bring you regional, national, and international news from a different perspective. Opinion from Emil Franzi, Phil Richardson, and other top national columnists. Plus, Eric Peters with auto reviews, Bob Garver on movies, Rebecca Guthrie on books, a section on Western heritage, and sports coverage, too. It's a cross-section of information found nowhere else. SOAZNewsX.com. Published Mondays and Thursdays. Subscriptions are free at SOAZNewsX.com.
Welcome back. to the Buckmaster Show, where this portion of the program brought to you by our friends in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, just 3 hours east of Tucson, to historic Silver City, known for its vibrant arts community. Downtown Silver City hosts a variety of galleries, gift shops, historic buildings, fine dining, and quaint homes. There's plenty of great places to stay in Silver City, including Georgetown Cabins and Cottage of Whispering Canyon. You can find out about the many things to do and the great places to stay by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. Well, on the November ballot in the city of Tucson, there'll be a couple of charter change questions, along with a citizens initiative to ban red light cameras in the city of Tucson. But we're going to be concentrating on the charter change over the next few minutes with Steve Lynn. Mr. Lynn is the campaign coordinator and member of the Tucson Charter Change Coalition. Steve, how are you?
Great, Bill. Thanks for having me.
Tell me a little bit about what questions are on the ballot. This hasn't gotten a lot of publicity, and people need to know about it.
They do, and I suspect that most people are not even aware necessarily that Tucson is a charter city, meaning that when it was developed as a community in 1929, a charter was agreed to by the citizenry to set up some of the rules of governing the city. But since 1929, that charter has changed very, very little. And if you can imagine, in 1929, there were 35,000 people living here. Now we have over 535,000. So things have changed dramatically in the time that since the charter was originally adopted. Well, last year, the mayor and council put together a citizens panel to study the charter and to make recommendations as to how it might be updated to better reflect the kind of government that we need in today's modern times. The committee met for several months and unanimously agreed on two charter changes that are on the ballot this year as Proposition 403 and 404. And city voters will have an opportunity to vote on those two changes. Proposition 403 actually increases the amount of voting potential that the mayor has. Right now, the mayor is actually at a disadvantage with respect to the other members of the council in voting to hire a police chief or a fire chief, and in fact, his or her presence doesn't even count toward a quorum to have a meeting. So this recommendation corrects that, gives the mayor the same voting power as the rest of the council. And Proposition 404 really strengthens the ability of the city manager to efficiently and effectively manage the city. Right now, city department heads are hired and fired through a variety of mechanisms, but this would standardize the hiring and firing of most department heads under the city manager for whom they work, and would give that manager the ultimate authority to either hire or terminate an employee should they require one or the other.
You know, going back to 2010, Steve Lynn, I believe that's when the Charter Change Coalition, kind of known as TC3, came about. There was talk of quite a few different charter changes going to the public. What are some of the ones that didn't make the ballot this time, but still I'm sure will be talked about in the future?
There are, Bill, several, but I think the most prevalent of the ones discussed was what we would call ward-only elections. If your listeners are aware, the city council members are nominated by ward and then elected citywide. It's a hybrid system that very few cities use anymore. Most cities are either at large, meaning all members of the mayor and council are elected citywide, or they are nominated and elected in districts. And there was a considerable amount of discussion last time as to whether or not that was a change that should be made. But interestingly enough, the process this time is different. The committee that was put together by the mayor and council was a group that was working from the inside out, if you will. They were a mayor and council appointed group. They were working under the auspices of the city council. And their recommendations went directly to the city council and then went on the ballot. And it was a unanimous recommendation both ways, both to the Marin Council and from the Marin Council to the ballot. Last time, it was an outside group, the coalition, that was suggesting all the changes that should be made. And quite honestly, this time around, the coalition has embraced the process that the Marin Council chose to use. In addition to the two recommendations that are on the ballot this year, the mayor has already stated publicly that he wants that commission to continue to work and to work on other issues like ward-only elections, to come back to the voters in perhaps another a year or two with additional changes that should be made to update the charter.
Steve, going back to, as you say, rightly so, 1929, when this current charter, the current charter for the city of Tucson, why was this particular form of electing our council people chosen historically? What was some of the thinking?
You know, I'm not sure I know historically, Bill, what the thinking was at the time. If you can imagine that the entire city was 35,000 people,
mm-hmm.
and you then had six wards that were established at the time, each one of those wards would have had really a very small population. So it may have been simply a matter of suggesting that the Marin Council might need to be very familiar with a certain geography in order to understand what was going on at the city at that time, but then be elected by the entire city of 35,000 so that they would take with them those very local issues, but think more broadly about the city as they were serving as part of the city council. I'm only speculating that that was the thinking, but I think that makes sense. Nowadays, each member of the city council has over 80,000 constituents alone, and it certainly is a daunting task to not only be familiar with the issues that are important in your councilmanic ward, but also all of the issues that are before the city council from an entire city perspective.
Is it unusual, going back to the item 403, I believe, that pertains to the mayor, is it unusual for a city not to have a mayor who has so little power?
Well, cities have, you know, a broad spectrum of powers that they give to the mayor. This council manager form of government that we have is often also referred to as a weak mayor form of government. But very few cities have an inequality built in where the members of the council actually enjoy more voting power than the mayor. The mayor is the one member of the mayor and council who is both nominated and elected citywide. And so certainly that person should have at least as much voting power as the rest of the council. Why that was the case when the charter was adopted to disadvantage the mayor, I'm not sure. I have a feeling it may have been a matter of trust at the time for those who were voting, but that's speculation on my part.
So these items, 403 and 404, will be on the City of Tucson ballot, and you must live in the City of Tucson to have a say in this. How soon, Steve, if they both pass or one passes, would these be implemented?
Well, I believe they take effect fairly quickly, and I don't know exactly whether there's a 30-day waiting period after the vote canvass and so on, but I will tell you that the idea is for them to take effect almost immediately so that we can begin enjoying both the equity that 403 would give the mayor and also the efficiency and effectiveness that 404 would give the city manager. The goal, of course, is to provide a city government that is both fair but also accountable and effective.
Steve Lind, always a pleasure. Thank you for informing us about Proposition 403 and Proposition 404 on the City of Tucson ballot. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you, Bill. Very, very good to be with you.
Steve Lynn with us. Steve does so much in this community, serves on so many boards, really an outstanding citizen. We are lucky to have Mr. Lynn in our community. We're pushing now toward 1244. It's always a pleasure to welcome Attorney Don Luce, and Mr. Luce will be with us coming up right after the break. Viro Mori is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. And now at Viro Amore's lovely new location within the remodeled Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, Viro Amore is proud to announce an expanded menu and bar offerings with 16 microbrews on tap and 14 keg wines, along with two separate cooler rooms to keep the beverages at just the right temperature. Viro Amore, Plaza Palomino, and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Viro Amore on the web at viroamore.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100. The Regional Transportation Authority is delivering on its promises with more than 660 completed transportation improvements, pedestrian and bicycle safety upgrades, new sidewalks and bike lanes, as well as roadway transit and traffic signal technology improvements are helping people and goods move across our region. The RTA and its member jurisdictions are working together to offer you more options. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. More at rtamobility.com.
Ah, it's 6 a.m. and my flight leaves for Denver in 2 hours. But no need to rush. Because I'm flying out of Tucson, I have some extra me time, which means I can relax and start my day the way I love to start every day, with a run, a hot shower, and breakfast with my family, not a 2-hour drive in rush hour traffic.
Flying from Tucson International Airport is convenient and cost-effective. Check out our cost comparison calculator at flytucson.com or text the word COMPARE to 51313. Fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Coming up Friday, Arizona Border Regent Rick Myers will be our Friday Focus interview. The Friday Roundtable features Sarah Garrett Gassner of the Arizona Daily Star and Mari Herreras of the Tucson Weekly. It's Buckmaster noon to 1 on AM 1030 KBOI, The Voice, and always on BuckmasterShow.com. Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. We are joined in studio with Attorney Don Luce of Luce Brown and Hobb Kirk & Associates. The firm has offices here conveniently located in Tucson and in the Phoenix area. Mr. Luce is the Buckmaster Show legal contributor and author of two very popular books, easy to understand. You don't need to be a lawyer to understand Arizona Laws 101, a handbook for non-lawyers. In fact, that's what Mr. Luce intended. He didn't write this for his colleagues in the legal profession. He wrote it for you and I, the folks who are not practicing law. His other book, Estate Planning in Arizona, What You Need to Know, and I like to add another subtitle, What You Need to Be Talking About Now. Don Luce, good to see you.
Thank you, Bill. Great to be back.
Isn't that accurate? You didn't write the book for your colleagues.
My colleagues already know the law. basically.
Yeah, I hope so.
What I wanted to do, however, was to write it in plain English so that non-lawyers would also know the law. So if an Arizona resident has a question about any one of the 101 laws, hopefully they can find the answer in the book, and they either won't need to go see a lawyer and pay a lot of money for that, or if they do need to see a lawyer, hopefully they'll be better informed and it won't take as long to be with the lawyer to get an understanding as to the nature of their legal issue.
What about this news about Oregon, now one of four states that have legalized the sale of recreational marijuana?
You know, Oregon, Washington, Colorado, and Alaska are the four, and I'm not surprised, and I wouldn't be surprised if more states were added to that list. You and I have spoken before on many occasions about the conflict that currently exists between the states that permit marijuana usage either in a medical context or without restriction, except perhaps for quantity, and the federal law that says marijuana is a controlled substance. It's a Schedule I drug, which means that according to federal law, it has no medicinal or medical benefit whatsoever, and even its mere possession is a federal crime. So you have the federal government on the one hand who is charged with enforcing that law but has chosen not to do it with respect to the states that have legalized it.
It's like a look the other way law.
Well, it's... It's problematic, especially for people who have, for instance, federal contracts that have federal prohibitions against employing workers who use scheduled drugs like mm-hmm. marijuana. And then the states that permit even the recreational use, like Oregon, just as we said, was added to that list, and so. What is a person to do? Well, the short answer is that there's a lot of litigation about these issues because an employer who employs someone who uses marijuana under state law legally but has a federal contract that says you can't employ anyone who uses marijuana, that employer's in a bit of a pickle, and the courts have been called upon more and more frequently to sort those kinds of issues out. Now, interestingly, I think next election year we are going to have on our ballot an initiative to legalize marijuana for recreational use in Arizona.
Hmm.
If you think back to 2010, which is when the Arizona Medical Marijuana Act passed, it was about 50-50. About half of the voters voted against medical marijuana, and about half of the voters voted for medical marijuana, and the margin was less than 1%.
Hmm.
I don't know what's transpired in the last 5 years. My sense is that this might not be a bad time to retest that on the ballot. I think the proponents of recreational marijuana in Arizona might have a better chance of getting something like that passed than they would have had even 2 or 3 years ago. But I think we're going to see it.
So medical marijuana, medicinal marijuana, is the law of the land in Arizona.
It is. The Arizona Medical Marijuana Act essentially empowered the Department of Health Services to issue licenses for about 125 dispensaries statewide. And those dispensaries, through a myriad of regulations, are permitted to grow the marijuana for their inventory. It's a highly regulated industry, but there are 125 or so dispensaries now in Arizona that sell marijuana to tens of thousands of medical marijuana cardholders. And under state law, that activity is perfectly legal. Under federal law, as I mentioned, the mere possession of marijuana is a federal crime.
Now, if indeed the voters that this goes to the sale of making marijuana legal in Arizona, if that were to pass, would these folks who are already selling the medicinal marijuana, wouldn't they already have a leg up?
I believe that the owners of the dispensaries who sell medical marijuana presently would have a significant advantage if recreational marijuana were passed in Arizona. Look, they've already got the infrastructure. They've already got the inventory pipeline. These are all things that are very difficult to establish, and they're already there because they are already selling marijuana to medical marijuana cardholders.
And how does someone become a medical marijuana cardholder? Is it as easy as going to your physician and saying, whatever, I have headaches and I need some medical marijuana?
Well, yes and no. So we have a lot of medical marijuana cardholders in Arizona. I'm not sure what the exact number is, but it's in the tens of thousands. So we know that there are lots of people in Arizona who hold these medical marijuana cards, which would suggest that it's not terribly difficult to obtain one. Now, the process is pretty straightforward. Your physician needs to essentially certify that you have a chronic condition, one of the conditions that the DHS recognizes that will allow the physician to then recommend the issuance of a medical marijuana card, and then the patient will get the card directly from DHS based upon that physician's recommendation.
All right, let's change gears here, but we seems like almost every month there's some marijuana legal news. Don Luce with us, attorney at law, and Don is our Buckmaster Show contributor. The governor facing a new Supreme Court ruling. Supreme Court rulings, nothing new to the administration. What's this one about?
Well, this involves a helicopter company operating at the Grand Canyon, mm-hmm. offering tours to tourists and also providing other business-type services. But this company owes not quite $1 million, but pretty close to it, in unpaid taxes for a four-year period that it was audited by the Department of Revenue. Okay, so you would think that that's fairly straightforward. A company gets audited, and the Department of Revenue determines that it owes back taxes. But it's not that simple. In this case, the legislature voted to alter the law retroactively, in other words, going back in time to give the taxpayer an exemption that the taxpayer thought that it was entitled to, but that the Court of Appeals said, no, you're not entitled to. The governor vetoed the bill as overly broad, but then the governor directed the Department of Revenue to not collect the tax, saying that he was confident that the legislators would come up with a more acceptable retroactive bill next year. Now, in the meantime, what happened was that the Court of Appeals decision went to the Arizona Supreme Court. And just this week, the Arizona Supreme Court affirmed the Court of Appeals decision, meaning that this helicopter company owes nearly $1 million in back taxes, and it's now clear legally the exemption on which it relied doesn't apply. So is happening now is that the governor's office is saying, well, we really don't have any longer on which to delay the collection of this tax. But interestingly, lawmakers, I believe, are still considering passing a retroactive law that would allow this taxpayer to not pay the tax that the courts have said are clearly owed. This may result in additional litigation because the people who are opposed to this decision to not collect the tax say, you know, taxes are public property. And if you don't collect taxes that are owed, then what you're essentially doing is making a public gift to the company that owes the taxes. And under our Constitution, you can't do that. So I don't know what's going to happen with this, but it does look like something that may be subject to further litigation.
Don Luce is with us of Luce Brown Hobkirk and Associates, been serving clients in Arizona in the area of business litigation and estate since 1982. Estate planning is one of Don Luce's specialties. You wrote a book about it, Estate Planning in Arizona. People still have trouble coming to the table. Many people have trouble coming to the table to think about, I guess, their ultimate demise. They really should be thinking about it.
You know, it is a difficult subject. It's not difficult for me to discuss with someone, but I think it's difficult for many of my clients to come to grips with. In other words, at some point in time, we're not going to be around to make the decisions, and therefore we need to essentially put these things in writing so that our successors will know not only what we want, but also will be able to carry out our directives. And so when you talk about estate planning, you're talking about things like trust and wills, but also things like healthcare directives, which speak to what level of healthcare you want in the event that you're not able to make the decision for yourself, and giving someone the power to make that decision for you if you're incapacitated.
That's so important. Estate Planning in Arizona, What You Need to Know by Don Luce, and of course his other very popular book in its second edition, Arizona Laws 101, a handbook for non-lawyers. Don Luce, have a great week. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Bill. My pleasure.
Great weekend. I should have said. The week is almost over, but weekend is here. Thanks, Don. All right, coming up this afternoon for Tucson at 4 with Mike Shaw, 4 to 5, then Wake Up Tucson 6 to 8, and then the Daily Double with Christy Simone and a guest host from 8 to 9. So we do 3 hours of local talk in the morning, an hour with me at midday, and then Mike Shaw in the afternoon. Until then, have a great afternoon and evening. See you tomorrow.
Intelligent Talk 24/7, AM 1030, KVOI, Cortero, Tucson. On the web at KVOI.com.